personal foul. Unsportsmanlike conduct.
Astree tackled the quarterback. He's giving him business down there. That's a 15-yard penalty.
The Super Bowl, Dal.
Dun, 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 dun. I know that's Monday Night Football, but same thing.
Eagles and Chiefs. And I got a bit of a question here for you, Dal. How would you consider this? Everyone's talking about if the Chiefs win, does this help kickstart their dynasty? Because as part of, in my brain, and I assume many other people feel this way too, you need three. Three in the same decade makes you a dynasty. As Dal is fist bumping about a notification he just received.
No, I'm going to get to this, so you go ahead.
So, three championships, the Chiefs would have two under the Mahomes era. You know what no one is talking about, and mostly because I think we're confused as to how it would work? If the Eagles win one, does that give them two of the three they need for a dynasty? Or the fact that they have a brand new head coach and quarterback, do they need to start over and win three more? Like, let's say the Eagles win two in a row. Do you count 2017 and say, yeah, they won three in a decade, the Eagles are a dynasty? Or do you go, well, I don't know, that was the Peterson Foles Eagles, this is the Sirianni Hurts Eagles.
It really is a completely different group of guys.
To an extent, though most of the defense is actually pretty much the same, and the offensive line is mostly the same. Isn't it funny, though, how new head coach and quarterback outdoes all that, so the perception is it's a brand new team.
But I guess I feel like if you're talking, first off, the word dynasty is a pretty big, it's one of those discussions that nerds have, which is why we're doing it.
Yeah.
To me, Kansas City, three Super Bowls in 4 years, you could argue, at least within your own fan base, that you are in the middle of a small dynasty.
I'm not going to give credit for being dominant.
Oh,
I only give credit as a dynasty. You need three Super Bowl wins. That's my minimum criteria.
Which is again, that's totally fine. But if you're just talking discussion of, can the fan base say we were among the best in the league for a period of time, the Chiefs are there.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, they're...
Like, would you consider the 90s Bills a dynasty?
Which is exactly where I was headed. I would say yes.
I would say no.
To a certain extent, because they made a 30 for 30 about it. And I guess part of that is, it's... they're kind of an outlier, though. But if you're just talking dynasty,
of course,
like championship, because I'm with you.
Mm-hmm.
To me, you got to have at least three championships. And it's got to be within a relatively snug, tight frame, time frame.
I usually say 10 years. You got to win three. However, my brain also has this unwritten rule that I never actually brought up before. So this shows the first time I'll just tell people the way my brain works. There can also only be one dynasty per decade. You have to say, all right, this decade belonged to this team. And so there actually are two teams that would technically, by my criteria, be considered dynasties in the lore of NFL history that I don't consider dynasties because there was another team already there that was better than them. And it was, and here's another one. Do you consider the Ken Stabler, John Madden Super Bowl to be part of the three Super Bowls the Raiders won between, because then in 80 and 83, they won it with Plunkett and, I forget the head coach's name, slick dude from California.
Which year are you talking?
I'm talking 1980 and 1983 when the Raiders won.
Remember.
They had a brand new head coach and they had Jim Plunkett at quarterback. Would you consider that to be part of the same team, part of the dynasty that goes with the 76 Super Bowl that was Stabler and Madden and Biletnikoff and Branch?
Well, according to your championships in a 10-year span, then yes.
Yes, but I don't consider that Raiders team a dynasty because the 70s Steelers and the 80s 49ers already take claim to those decades. Raiders.
Well, and I'll throw this out there, too. By definition, Washington had a dynasty.
And that was the other one.
They had three championships in a 9-year span, and they went to four Super Bowls, winning three of four.
I was about to say 82.
87,
91. And 91.
And they were into the 83 and lost.
And that was going to be my second example is, whoopsie daisies, they don't count because the 49ers and Cowboys take their spot because for some reason I can only credit one dynasty per decade, and I don't know why. That's just how my brain works. Like, no, each decade belongs to a team.
No,
that's how it works.
I understand, but at the same time, I will also feel like when I want to wear my franchise's colors loud and proud, I feel like Washington does not get enough credit, in particular Joe Gibbs.
And you know why?
For what he accomplished during that reign.
I would say you can give, you know, Joe Gibbs underrated. Would you not argue that people forget that that was all within a decade because of the fact that they won those three Super Bowls with three different quarterbacks?
Right. And
like, people just go, oh, well, that was Theismann's team, Williams' team, and Rippon's team. So those are three different teams.
Yeah, three non-Hall of Fame quarterbacks, by the way.
Although, you could argue that Theismann, if he had played a full career, was that direction.
I agree.
He was very good.
If he would have had the longevity, I think he would have had a chance. Famously, obviously, did not.
No.
But I totally understand. So, yeah, going back to the Chiefs, I guess what I'm saying is if I'm a Chiefs fan, and I had been for 50-plus years, like my sister, who, like I said, she was a teenager when they won the first one with Len Dawson smoking a cigarette on the sideline on a folding chair, which we joke about that all the time. And then you cheer for that team for 50 years, and then they finally win another one. But now, I mean, let's be honest, the Chiefs are damn good. Mm-hmm. And they're good. They're like one of the favorites to go to the Super Bowl every year now.
Yeah.
I think within the Chiefs' kingdom, you have to call them, they're able to call that a dynasty.
Here,
if you and I are just going to have a conversation historically like we just did,
mm-hmm.
No, the Chiefs aren't. Because they only won one championship.
Yet.
Yeah, but even if they win this one, I don't know that it qualifies just yet.
I say you need three. The part of my brain, though, itching, says, you know, I don't like the Chiefs. I hope that they stick with one for the rest of this Andy Reid Mahomes era. But do we really think we can fight them off for as long as those two are going to last? Can we really keep them from winning two more for another 10 years? Do we really believe that that is possible, NFL? We can hope. I thought that about New England for a while. Once they didn't win again after the first year I watched football was 2002. The Patriots immediately won two Super Bowls in a row, made themselves a dynasty, and then didn't win again heading into 2014. I genuinely thought to myself, oh, good, so we're done with New England then. I know they're going to be here. They're going to be sniffing the Super Bowl for a while, but I think we're done with them. They haven't won for 10 years. The oopsie daisies, and then they found a way to win three more. And I kind of am starting to feel that way about even if the Chiefs, even if you can hold them off for a little bit, how long can you really hold off the Chiefs before they eventually become that dynasty? I fear it. I'm hoping maybe the Bengals or the Bills can take over the AFC here shortly, but they just right now, it does feel, unfortunately, like maybe they are the Peyton Colts and maybe the Roethlisberger Steelers.
Yeah, I think so.
To the Chiefs, Patriots.
But I also think there's a great opportunity for teams like the Bills, like the Bengals, maybe even the Chargers, some other teams that we aren't even looking at right now to kind of break that up. But as
I'd
of
like
right,
to see Jacksonville keep building.
But as of right now, yeah, they're it. They're kind of the benchmark.
Can we just say too about the Chargers are running into huge cap issues this offseason. They've got an issue. They're up against the cap. They're going to have to start cutting players. So you're telling me that they put together this team for the last 3 years that now, oopsie daisies, we have to start cutting superstars or getting trades, like, maybe even have to rebuild some of the roster.
Like Keenan Allen. We're talking huge names like that.
You have major cap issues. They've been to the playoffs once.
And for one game.
That was your huge spending spree?
That was your window? Question mark? Yeah, it's... Well, that's why they fired a bunch of people and basically everybody but the coach, which everybody assumed that's what was going to happen, but it didn't. But anyway, going back to the Super Bowl, because we still got to make our pick.
That's true. I actually locked my pick in about a week and a half
really?
Ago.
I still haven't made
there,
mine.
But
honestly, I'm like, I still don't know. I really don't.
I am taking Philadelphia in this one. And not just because of my hatred of Kansas City, but as long as Jalen Hurts doesn't sell in this game, which is my one big fear, is that Hurts is kind of the weak link. I know that feels mean. He's up for MVP and everything. He is my greatest fear on this Eagles roster. Because if Jalen Hurts plays well, who is stopping that roster that Philadelphia has? A.J. Brown, Devontae Smith, you got Dallas Goedert. They have a slew of pretty decent running backs coming out of the backfield. They have the best offensive line in football. They can run the ball with anybody. And their defense was top three in the league. Well, led the league in sacks.
So what? I'm going to go back to the Chiefs a couple years ago. That's what I thought about the Chiefs. Who the heck is going to hang with this team? They're going to be dominant. They're going to win like five Super Bowls in a row. And then the Tampa Bay defense beat the hell out of them.
But is that what you see happening with Kansas City's defense?
I don't know. But that's the beauty part of this game and why we're all so intrigued. We can think one thing.
Mm-hmm.
We can even think that we're sure about one thing or some things. But that doesn't mean that's what's going to happen.
I don't
know what's going to happen in the game.
I am already sick and tired of the narrative that's they've got it pre-ready in their back pocket. The media,
the script,
the ankle of Patrick Mahomes, guys.
It's a non-story at this point.
They SportsCenter put out a whole story today. Andy Reid says Mahomes is going to play on the bad ankle. He played last week.
It's been 2 weeks.
It is a mild boo-boo at this point.
I say the big deal was that he played 2 weeks ago.
Barely it was a big deal. He was fine.
If you look at the injury, it is kind of crazy. It's crazy.
He was fine.
That he wasn't hurt worse than he was.
Maybe, but the whole thing about he was on one leg.
But now they're just,
like, he didn't break the thing. He had a sprain.
Yeah, they're making it a bigger deal than it is.
Jack Youngblood literally played a Super Bowl on a broken leg.
Jack Youngblood broke his leg.
That thing was Roger splintered.
Roger Craig had a finger amputated.
No, Roger.
Or not Roger Craig. Ronnie Lott. Sorry, got my Niners mixed up. Had a finger amputated because he didn't want to come out of the game.
Yes.
It was, oh, I can come out of this game and have all 10 of my fingers, or I can continue playing. And Ronnie Lott was like, I don't need 10 fingers.
And to be fair, he still has 10 fingers. He's just got, it was the top digit of the pinky.
Right, but he had part of it cut off.
That's more finger than I would have cut off for most things.
Anyway, they're making too big a deal out of it. But to me, the only way Mahomes' ankle injury is a big deal this week is if it gets retweaked just the right way.
Mm-hmm.
Then it becomes a big deal.
And here's the thing. Their offensive line is okay. It's above average. It's pretty good. They have a really good tackle in Orlando Brown, who's a free agent this offseason, by the way. Bears, please. But that Philadelphia pass rush is no joke. Led the league in pressures, led the league in sacks, by a huge margin, by the way. It was ridiculous. I believe Pro Football Focus broke it down. Percentage of opposing dropbacks with a QB pressure. And the Eagles were pressuring the quarterback, which means getting within a yard of the quarterback and either sacking him or you're within a yard of him when he throws the ball. The Eagles pressured the opposing quarterback on 38% of all dropbacks. Second best in the league. Number two was the Dallas Cowboys. 25%. It's a 13% drop off from 1 to 2.
And can you really make that a big stat though, Aaron? Because what are the things they have in common? They both play Washington twice. And our offensive line was crap.
Maybe,
most
but
of the year.
We just saw what they were able to do against the Giants, who have a good offensive line.
I'm just saying.
And what they did to San Francisco, and we could talk about, oh, they didn't have a quarterback.
They didn't have a quarterback because they took him out.
Well, yes. The quarterback doesn't protect himself, like pass protect. So if you're sacking a backup quarterback, that's still as good as sacking the starting quarterback.
Oh,
you still beat the lineman. And San Francisco has a good offensive line. And Philadelphia was throwing them around like rag dolls. Graham, you got Sweat. You got Cox in the middle. Ndamukong Suh is a backup on that line.
It makes me sick. He might win another ring. I hate that guy.
I hated him in Detroit. I feel like he's not as horrible of a person anymore. He got old, and I think he got tired of his own shtick and said, you know what? I'm just going to focus on playing football.
Maybe
now.
That's true, but I still think he's probably a jerk.
How about the fact that they've also got C.J. Gardner-Johnson and Ndamukong Suh on the same defense? That has to be the most obnoxious defense in history.
Probably.
Here's my favorite part, though. Do you remember when the Bears traded Robert Quinn to the Eagles for a fourth round pick and the national perspective was that the Bears got fleeced? Because how can you give up the guy who just had 18 sacks last year for a fourth round pick? Guess how many sacks Robert Quinn has this year in a Philadelphia Eagles jersey? The answer is less than one.
Oh.
Just so we're clear. He has one pressure, zero tackles.
You know what's going to be
awesome?
Zero
sacks. When he wins Super Bowl MVP?
Yes, your 2023 Super Bowl MVP. Just one of the few defensive players, Robert Quinn.
Here's my favorite thing, though, about that is that, first of all, I still have my argument of, well, you can't say that you fleeced us when you got no sacks out of it, because all we would have gotten then, presumably, is no sacks, and instead we got a fourth-round pick.
That's not scientifically sound. There's too many variables. You can't just carry that over.
Secondly, after not doing anything all regular season, so that I still feel like a fourth-round pick for him was probably pretty solid, if he wins Super Bowl MVP, that means the Eagles won the football game. I get both things.
Yeah, that's true. I think I am going with the Eagles as well. I think it's going to be a great game, though. I don't think it's going to be one-sided at all. I think it's going to be fun. In fact, dare I say, I think both teams will have at least four touchdowns. I'm going to go with that. Maybe a couple of those are defensive touchdowns. I don't know. But I'm just looking at the numbers right now. I'm trying to find the spread and some of that stuff for you.
By the way, T. Higgins today broke a lot of Chicago Bears fans' hearts. I don't know if you saw that. Literally just like an hour ago, was asked about his thoughts on scrolling through Twitter and seeing himself photoshopped in basically every jersey across the NFL, because it's now a well-known fact that the Bengals are going to have to pay Ja'Marr Chase and pay Joe Burrow and T. Higgins next year is the final year of his rookie contract. And they said, so what are your thoughts on everyone wanting you to... And he said, oh boy, here we go. I mean, it's flattering, but I plan on being a Bengal for a very long time. All right, pretty standard answer. So some reporter asked him, would you take a pay cut to stay in Cincinnati? And T. Higgins' response was, a receiver like me would do a lot of things to stay playing with Joe Burrow.
It's a good point.
So
so the spread, going back to that, is Eagles minus 1.5. So they're a 1.5-point favorite, which is Vegas's way of saying, we don't know.
I think that's as much of a testimony about... You look at these rosters up and down. The Eagles are better, right? We can all agree on that. At like, I don't know, 48 out of the 53 players on the roster.
I don't know if I'd go that far.
What a testament it is to how scared people are of Patrick Mahomes, though, to say, I think the Kansas City Chiefs... this is going to sound so mean, but let's call it the Brad Johnson test. Put Brad Johnson on both of these teams and say, go at it. How good are the Philadelphia Eagles? Still a 13-win team?
No.
You don't think so? 12-win team?
I don't know. 9?
I don't think so. That is a stacked roster that they've got. What are the Kansas City Chiefs if you put Brad Johnson on that team? 5 wins?
I don't know.
Most?
So what you're saying is Patrick Mahomes is the MVP.
Patrick Mahomes, I think, has turned this from what should be like 4.5, 5.5 spread to, well, crap, the Chiefs still have Mahomes. I don't know, 1.5 points, I guess?
Also trying to see what the over-under is for for this. It's just, I don't know, I think that's just, maybe I'll actually make a bet. Earlier this week, I reported on a radio show, 50 million Americans, which is roughly 1 in 5, is going to place a bet on the Super Bowl in some way this year, which is double what it was last year.
I placed a very small bet last year. I remember that only because I saw what the payout was. And I said, oh, what the heck? So I bet that Trey Hendrickson would win Super Bowl MVP. I put $5 down because the payout was $2,000 if it happened.
Hey, you never know.
And I said, well, I mean, at least he's a pass rusher. So if he gets like four sacks, he might win Super Bowl MVP. Scoop, $5. Yeah, what the heck?
And, scoop and score. You never know. Yeah, there were several, but there's several states. I don't have them in front of me anymore. But there are four or five significantly large states that had implemented an in-state sports book since last Super Bowl. And so those are all going to be added in, which is why. Mm-hmm. And so those 50 million Americans are going to wager approximately $16 billion on this game. And I thought to myself, why not me? Why not? Like I said, I'm not going to put too much on it, but I got to thinking I'd rather do a prop bet rather than a, like, this team's going to win, because I don't know who the heck's going to win. But is, like, are the Eagles going to convert two fourth downs in the game? I think they will.
Maybe.
And so I'm tempted to do something like that. I have another brother who likes to bet every year on the color of the Gatorade that is poured on the winning coach, which is a thing now.
By the way, have you seen the very interesting stat on older brother versus younger brother NFL matchups throughout history and the all-time record? They included coaches, by the way. So the Harbaugh brothers.
The Harbowl.
Yeah. And this is regular season and postseason. Older brothers are 39-6 against younger brothers head-to-head in NFL history.
Wow.
So, I believe Jason is the older of the two Kelsey brothers.
Yeah, he is.
So, fly, Eagles, fly.
I think it's I hope at some point in the game they, I don't know.
Another notch for older brother supremacy,
they
by the
bring
way,
in, well, as the youngest, you can kiss my butt. I would like to see Kansas City bring in Jason Kelsey, like, as a pass rusher for, like, one play. Just so they can say they actually played against each other.
Oh, you meant Travis Kelsey.
What'd I say?
You said the Chiefs to bring in Jason Kelsey as a pass rusher.
Sorry.
I said, oh, all right.
That would be bold. Anyway.
We're going to borrow your player and play him out of position. We think it'll be funny.
But I think it would be fun if they did something where they actually got to play against each other.
I think the game would have to be a little out of hand for someone to actually. Maybe. And at that point, does the leak in of Andy Reid going, you know what, I'm down by 28. It'd be really funny if I put Travis Kelsey in so we could play against his brother, wouldn't it? But also, oh my God, I'm down by 28. I'm not thinking about fun things right now.
But here's another, well, I guess this one's not a prop, but over-under is 51 points. I think that's going to be over.
Potentially, though the Super Bowl can surprise us from time to time.
Oh, yeah. You go back, what was it, the Patriots
and the Rams.
And the Rams was.
That was the number one and the number three offenses in the league.
Yeah, and what it ended up being, 12-9 or 12-6?
I believe it was 13-3.
I don't know. It was low.
Yeah.
But
never forget the 2007 Patriots put up a whopping 14 points in that Super Bowl.
Well, I'm gonna go Eagles, and I am gonna go them covering the spread of a whopping 1.5 points, and I am saying that that's gonna be over. So I guess that's my.
I would personally be entertained by this because I am a proud hater. When I dislike a team, I will just full on hate on them. You've seen me with the Packers, right? So I'm not the guy who says, "Well, I'm just hoping for a good game." Like, no, if I have a team that I really like or really don't like in a game, I'm just rooting for bloodshed. If this turns into Tampa, Kansas City, I said, I have a genuine fear it might for the other people that are all going to whine about it. And I, by myself, will be sitting at home enjoying it thoroughly going, it's 34-10.
I want a good game.
I just want an Eagles victory. If they can win by multiple scores, all the better.
Here's the funny thing, and I brought this up on the morning show that I do with Duke Dance here. I think I'm cheering for the Eagles, but I'm not sure.
which is odd.
But I have found in my personal experience that in these types of games where you're not quite sure, where you don't have a dog or you're supposed to cheer against the team that you're kind of leaning towards, which is mm-hmm. where I'm at. I'm supposed to hate the Eagles.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost, I have to wait till the game starts. Mm-hmm. And then, like, there's a play that happens, and then there's a spontaneous reaction that happens, whether it's a bad call or a big play, and eventually you realize in your head what you're doing, and you go, oh, this is the team I'm cheering for or not cheering for. I didn't know that. Does that happen to you? That happens to me all the time.
No, I do occasionally get the I wasn't paying attention and I accidentally cheered for the wrong team thing.
But
you ever done that?
So, but there'll be times I'll be like, we're in the second quarter, and I find myself, okay, I gotta stop here. And I'm like, oh, I guess I'm cheering for this team in the Super Bowl. I didn't know that.
Easily the funniest one ever of me doing that, by the way, was this Christmas, my dad just staring at me all confused as I was talking to my wife. She's holding the baby, and we're all, and I'm eating my lunch. And I look over, and the Packers are playing the Dolphins, and I'm not thinking clearly. I just turn and glance to the TV, hut, takes the snap, and it's the Dolphins with the ball. But for whatever reason, I went, kill him, kill him, get him, get him. Tua throws the ball, it's complete to Waddle. Waddle takes off, scores a touchdown, and I go, oh, turn back around, start talking to my wife. And my dad goes, are you cheering for the Packers? I said, no. Turn back to the TV, go, oh, yes, go, yes, Jalen Waddle, yes, my bad, I reacted incorrectly. Literally forgot what was happening on the TV screen for a second.
But this is exactly what I'm talking about. This is your subconscious saying, I kind of like the Dolphins, which is fine.
Hate the Dolphins in this case.
But then you have to tell yourself, oh, wait, I'm supposed to hate the Dolphins.
No.
I'm supposed to hate the Packers.
Yes.
Yeah.
I do. By the way,
I'm just saying there's more to this story than you think.
I've done that a number of times, though. I've done it with Dallas as well, where they were playing the Giants once, and I did it. I did it once in a Vikings-Bears game. I rooted against the Bears for a play because I wasn't paying attention.
Oh, yeah, that happens once in a while. Yeah. But I don't hate the Chiefs. The reason why I think I'm on this bandwagon is
osmosis. All of the teams standing too close to me.
All of the teams I cheer for out. Are underdogs.
Yeah.
The only team I've ever cheered for in my life that was supposed to win all the time that did was the Chicago Bulls, the Jordan Bulls.
It doesn't count if it's your own team.
But what I'm saying is I generally pick teams that for the life of my lifespan, they've been underdogs way more than not.
Mm-hmm.
And so I find myself, like most Americans, I would say, you kind of skew that way. I think they have a lot of... We are the underdogs. We weren't supposed to win the Revolutionary War, but dadgummit, we did.
We're a good long ways away from that perception worldwide now. But
well, yes.
Except for in men's soccer.
We're kind of like the Tom Brady. We're kind of like the Tom Brady of the world powers.
Tom Brady was even a patriot
and everything. We were not supposed to turn into much, and then we won 7 Super Bowls. We're back-to-back World War champions.
The U.S. of A. has won every single NFL championship since 1920.
Yeah. Yes,
I like those. The rest of you countries need to start catching up.
I like
those
memes that, yeah, point out, like, it's like national championship, you know, championships this many, and, yeah, they don't have... Anyway, but I like the... I might have to get me one of those, yeah, the back-to-back World War champs shirts for the 4th of July. I like that kind of stuff.
By the way, speaking of Super Bowls, do you ever watch those NFL Films marathons the week before the Super Bowl where they show every Super Bowl in a row, the 30-minute highlight things? Because I love those. I'm addicted to them.
Yeah, I love those,
Recorded
too.
Every single one
they
this past
They do such
weekend.
A good job.
So anyway, I'm watching my wife pointed out a very hilarious thing that NFL Films does, or used to do back in the 70s, and I do find it, but they have stock footage of certain fans that weren't at games they're currently showing, but they have the footage, so they'll insert it. And she pointed out, so we're watching Super Bowl I, and I'm just, yeah, blah, 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 here we are. Max McGee makes the one-handed catch, and then he runs for the touchdown. Woo! Shows all the fans, and there's a lady in a pink coat big fluffy blonde hair, and she's, woo, yeah. Fast forward a little bit. We're at Super Bowl III. Joe Namath hands off Matt Snell, bounces outside. He's in for the touchdown. All the crowd, yeah. There's Pink Coat Lady again with her, yay, woo, yeah. And then guess who was also at Super Bowl IV when the kicker makes the game-winning kick on the final play of the game? I said,
Pink Coat Lady?
And Mackenzie goes, wow, this lady was rich back in the day. She's at every single Super Bowl.
There are people who've done that.
But it's the same clip.
Yeah. Well, you also have to understand, if you go back to, this is interesting, NFL films, when they first were getting started, so early days of NFL films, and what's interesting is they're so popular now, they've made a thing about NFL films on NFL films.
Yes.
But they were not welcome. Think about the old school hard-ass coaches that were coaching when that thing tried to start. They were like, get the bleep off my sideline. They were kicking them out of the way. They were breaking their stuff. And it's just, what's funny is now it's like,
You want
all that archived footage. But what I'm saying is, in the early days, the reason Pink Coat Lady keeps making it into these things is because
they had it.
That's what they had. That's the footage they had. And let's be honest, the technology is ridiculously advanced compared to what they were starting with.
And I make this argument all the time.
There was one angle and one snippet of the Immaculate Reception, arguably one of the biggest plays of all time. And to this day, Raiders fans say that should have been illegal because the camera didn't catch the moment of impact here and it bounced off. But it's just like, but there's no other angle. That's it. This is what you get.
My dad maintains to this day that he's pretty sure that Franco didn't even catch the ball.
Yeah. That's there's people that are saying that, say that I was at the game. Yeah, he didn't catch it.
My favorite is my uncle met Franco Harris, but right before he died, like literally a week before Franco died, at the Pittsburgh airport.
This is very recent, by the way.
Yes. And he came back and told us that he thought it was very funny that he walks up and he's like, you know, at this point, I'm a 50-year-old man. I'm not going to go freak out and bug Franco Harris. But I'm like, oh, look, it's Franco Harris. He goes, and the guy I'm with says, hey, you're Franco Harris, right? And he turns around and he says, yeah. And he said, he points at the statue over there. And he goes, you want me to sign something or something? And he goes, oh, no, I just, you know, I used to be a big fan of yours back in the day. Cool. And he's like, oh, okay. And then my uncle said, and the guy next to me pauses for a few seconds. He said, I think it's funny, though, that even on your statue over there, the ball's touching the grass.
Yeah, you have to be careful.
Franco Harris just laughed.
See, and you have to be careful because, yeah, it's nice that he laughed, but that's like when the one guy years ago went up to Buzz Aldrin and was saying the moon landing was fake, and Buzz Aldrin kicked his ass, punched him in the face, and he's an 80-year-old man, so it's not like you're going to press charges against Buzz freaking Aldrin. But yeah, it's like, nope, I'm not putting up with this. Punch in the face.
I haven't seen the statue myself, but if that's true, I find that hilarious that Pittsburgh Airport itself would design a statue on the Immaculate Reception and make the football touching the fake grass.
Well, I've always thought about that with sculptures because you have to hide the support structure. So for there to be a ball that's not quite in someone's hands, it has to come from somewhere.
No, it was in his hands. But it's the moment he catches the ball.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is they have to do little sneaky things like that. There has to be.
I find it funny that even in your statue, the ball's touching the grass.
And the grass is not the ground. So there you go.
I don't even know how
this got started.
Yes, but anyhow, I've argued many times that NFL Films is single-handedly responsible by itself for why football is the main sport played in America.
I think it's huge.
Baseball was so far ahead of football.
Horse racing.
When NFL
boxing
Films
was
first
all
hit
killing
the scene,
football.
And NFL Films turned. You think about it, even today, what other sport do we think of in cinematic recaps the way we do? Basketball, baseball, and hockey, I hate to unromanticize what I love to romanticize, which is sports, but they just feel like games, don't they?
Yep.
Most of the time, you're like, oh, the NBA Finals, oh, that team won. They are a better sports team than the other. I will now move on and never think of this again unless your own team is in it. Football feels different. You're like, no, this is
epic.
Like,
it feels epic.
Like, it does. It feels like a movie. Like, this will last forever. This is, we're going to watch the Eagles play the Chiefs. And somewhere in your brain, you're watching it the same way that you watched Luke fight Darth Vader the very first time when Star Wars first hit theaters, or you first watched it on VHS. And you're like, no, this is important. This is cinematic. This is epic. This is a one-time event that will be eternal. This is football, and it's different than other games. And NFL Films is the reason for that.
Yeah.
Entirely.
I agree. Well put. I love NFL Films. I think it's absolutely tragic that we lost Steve Sable so early. That guy was a freaking genius.
Well, and it was Ed Sable that got the things
started. It was, but I would argue that Steve Sable is who took it to the level we talk about. Not taking anything away from Ed Sable.
They are both currently enshrined in Canton in bronze, which I think is fitting.
But Steve Sable, I mean, holy crap. The guy died in his 50s. He's been dead for how long? 10, 12, 15 years now, something along those lines. Mm-hmm. Imagine what he'd be doing. I'm just saying, he came up with so many innovations. And not that they haven't had innovations, but it's sort of like losing Steve Jobs. You don't know what else was in his head.
Yeah. And may I just say,
love Steve Sable.
If you're a huge football nerd like we are, thanks Steve Sable Sable.
Absolutely.
Thank the Sable dynasty. In the same way.
Thanks for getting kicked by Vince Lombardi and not being a jerk about it. I don't know if that happened or not.
You know, I've brought it up before, and I probably will in a few episodes leading forward. It's almost WrestleMania season, Dal. I bring up wrestling quite a bit. If you're a wrestling fan, the McMahon family name has to be special in your heart in some way. No matter how much of a prick he actually is in real life. I almost said was. That man might outlive me. I'm not going to lie. he refuses to die.
Well, he's probably about 62% artificial at this point.
I have no idea. I find it creepy that he's like in his late 80s and he still posts videos online to his social media all the time of him in the gym lifting weights and lifting heavy. I'm like, there's no reason an 88-year-old man needs to be bench pressing 315
for reps. He's really that old?
He's pretty old. He's in his 80s.
You're going to make me Google this, aren't you?
Okay, Google it.
All right.
I think I'm going to say in his 80s. Regardless, he's far too old to be doing 315 for 10 reps.
Oh
dang it, 77.
It's still pretty old.
Yeah. it at that point, you don't even look... You're not pumping iron to look impressive anymore because you don't look sexy with all your muscles at that age. You look like something that lives at the bottom of the sea.
Huh. He's only worth $3 billion. That's not even very much. He couldn't even buy the Washington Commanders.
No, he'll just purchase... though it wasn't him this time, it's The Rock bringing back the XFL, isn't it?
So can I talk about that just a little bit?
Anyhow, so I'll just recap then real quick. In the same light that wrestling fans should respect McMahon family name, I honestly feel like even though they didn't have anything to do with the league itself, that's sort of the prestige that the Sable name should have on football and its fans.
I feel like the Sables are actually dignified.
Well, yes, they're not pricks, but... That, to be fair, that almost feeds into the McMahon aura in its own right.
Yeah. So as everybody talks about what's going on with their teams in the offseason. You got the draft coming up in a couple months.
The offseason that hasn't even officially started yet.
But
everyone that's not an Eagles and Chiefs fan is just going.
Our offseason started weeks ago. So we've already been talking about it. But I will argue that even whoever wins the Super Bowl, it's going to be arguable that Washington has the opportunity to have a better offseason than even the Super Bowl champions because they have a chance to get the millstone of Dan Snyder from around their neck and possibly put their head above water on a
Dal is going
basis.
To repeat this on every single episode every week until it happens.
Well... So you have that, but he's put his home up for sale. his $49 million home, which he 2 years ago he paid for it, almost like as a big middle finger. It's like, I'm not going anywhere. Well, now it's up for sale. And there's all kinds of buzz that as soon as the Super Bowl is over, things are going to happen quick.
Mm-hmm.
Well, quick as in real estate's concerned. You're talking maybe within 2 weeks of the end of the Super Bowl that Washington could have a new owner process in place, which is coming up quick, man. I'm excited about this. And you don't know who it's going to be, but it's going to be glorious. I'm so excited.
I have some Bears offseason news as well, as Adam Scheffler just reported yesterday. And Adam Scheffler, you know, not like a local Chicago reporter. That's a pretty well-respected reporting name across the NFL world. Just said that as far as he can tell from his inside sources, the Chicago Bears are going to be receiving, in his words, unbelievable offers from a few teams that are putting together trade packages right now for the number one overall pick.
Well, for whatever reason,
I don't know what unbelievable implies to Adam Scheffler. Like, I can't believe that you think I would give you the first overall pick for your kicker.
Isn't it Adam Schef- isn't it Adam Schefter?
I like to put the L in there. Oh, just sounds more natural.
All right.
Or, like, for instance, the Raiders letting Derek Carr go visit with the New Orleans Saints. I think that helped Chicago immensely. I know there were already rumors of it, but if the Raiders then are going full rebuild with it, sure, come on up here. Get yourself Bryce Young or Vegas. It'll cost you Devontae Adams, 2 first-round picks, and maybe your second-round pick, too. I don't know.
I'm going to go ahead and play your little game for just a few minutes. Because
okay. Please do.
There is a, for whatever reason, the circumstances within the league, usually teams don't like to present themselves as desperate. One, it's bad for negotiations.
Yes.
It looks bad for your fan base. Cause
which
looks,
is why everyone's laughing at the Colts GM who said if he liked a quarterback, he would, quote, move heaven and earth to go get
him.
Well,
and he's not really the only one who has made statements like that this offseason. There are teams that are basically, you know what? Pride be damned. We are going to do this, that, or the other. Now, maybe it's all talk because, like you said, you don't even particularly like this draft class as far as quarterbacks are concerned.
I'm not a huge fan of it.
But
I said the same thing about 2018 or 2017 too, and you then were Watson talking and Mahomes about, ended up coming
but
out
you were
of
talking
it.
About the Bears potentially getting a haul for the first round pick like 6 weeks into the season. and you were just hoping that that's what looks like that's
whoopsie
what's going to happen.
Whoopsie daisies, Aaron was accidentally correct.
Well, but it looks like that's what absolutely might happen. So it's kind of an interesting deal.
Thank you, Lovie Smith, by the way. All right? How about that? How about Lovie Smith being the reason that the Houston Texans came back, beat the Colts, and handed the Bears first overall on a silver platter?
I guess as far as your Chicago connections are concerned and lifelong things, then, yeah, he is now in the pantheon of all-timers
Put
for Chicago.
Put Lovie Smith in the Bears' Ring of Honor, not for taking us to a Super Bowl, but for this moment right here.
Well, add them all up as a contributor.
And I was a huge Lovie Smith supporter.
I actually like him. I think the Bears have never been the same since they got rid of him.
No. I mean, we had one shallow glimpse of glory in 2018, which resulted in one playoff game. But apart from that, Smith.
But looking at the draft, it's going to be. I think you got some teams that are basically. It's like, well, we've tried having dignity, but that didn't work. So now we're just going to say, what do you want? Because we got to move up. And not only that, look at how many coaches fired staffs this year. There were fewer head coaches fired because there were so many coaches willing to gut their roster, gut their coaching staff, because that's what it came down to. The ownership's like, we need changes, so you either need to do this or we're going to start all over. Oh, well, I'll fire this guy and we'll fire that guy and we'll do this, that, and the other. You saw a lot of that across the league from Dallas to the Chargers. There's a lot of teams that Tampa Bay did the same thing. There's Carolina
Now, we talked about, speaking of Carolina, there's another bit of news.
But what I'm saying is there was a lot of teams that kind of staved off the big decision for one more year.
Yes.
But that's driving this desperation now for the top of the draft. Yes. Aaron's just drooling.
And again, I've said before, I would be happy if the Bears said, you know what, we didn't get an offer we liked. We'll take Will Anderson. But here's the other part of this draft, is that you can trade back out of one. You don't have to trade back to two or four and only negotiate with Houston and say, well, we really want Will Anderson. Mel Kiper recently came, and I watch college football to an extent. I don't watch it as much as the NFL, but I certainly can't watch every single team the way you kind of can with the NFL. So some of these players I'm hearing about for the first time in the lead up to the draft. Like, I wasn't as familiar with, say, the dude from Clemson, the defensive end.
Yeah.
I watched like two Clemson games all year. I didn't watch a whole lot of Clemson. But the statement of there are about 15 to 20 edge rushers in this draft that he truly believes would be first round picks in any other draft, but they just happen to be in the draft that has all the pass rushers. What that tells me is, okay, well, maybe we don't need to get Will Anderson. Maybe we can trade back to 7 with the Raiders. We could trade back to 10 with Carolina. You can trade back, I don't know, maybe Washington likes Bryce Young. Where are you guys picking? We'll trade back with you guys.
We're 16, but we're not going for a quarterback.
Tampa Bay needs a quarterback now all of a sudden. You can trade back to 20 with Tampa Bay. They can come get their quarterback. Yippee, maybe you make them give you a wide receiver and still get a pass rusher back there. Like, there's so many options you can do now. It is a perfect time for the Bears if they want to go forward with Justin Fields, which it sounds like they do, and it's just fans and Warren Sapp that are fanning the they're going to pick a quarterback flames. I'd
be shocked.
I would be absolutely floored. This sounds like it set itself up perfectly for what the Bears want to do. Well, we want a pass rusher in the first round. That's what we want. We can trade out of one, and we can get all these pass rushers. Like,
yeah. Or maybe the Bears do something that you don't like. Maybe they trade all their picks for a sack of magic beans.
All things are possible. Now, I'll say this, though. I have been very critical of many of the Bears' GMs. Thus far, I like what Poles is doing.
I do, too. If I'm just being blunt, yeah.
I think
to this point, he's done everything that you had hoped he would do. Bowl. Well, most teams aren't.
Yeah. All right. Well, let me go trade a first round pick to move up in the draft to select Anthony Miller, because I really like him out of Memphis. Anthony Miller ended up being an adequate wide receiver in the NFL. These are things he wanted to make a splash too badly, and while fans like that in the moment, that's not what Kansas City does.
No.
That's not what New England does.
Kansas City will go find a guy from Rutgers who was undrafted, who takes over the friggin' running back spot, Pacheco, and you watch him run, and it's like, how the hell was this guy not on anybody's radar? He's so fast, and he runs like he doesn't care if he ever is normal again.
Yeah.
I love watching that guy, and yet undrafted.
My favorite highlight I've seen was someone on YouTube, and the video was captioned, I forget his name now. I'm a terrible person. The Houston Texans rookie, the running back.
Damian Pierce.
Damian Pierce. And the highlight was titled, how did Damian Pierce fall so far in the draft? And it was a highlight of him at Florida. He goes around the edge with a sweep, and someone face masks him and the penalties come flying and he's dragging the guy, his helmet pops off, and even though the play is now dead, he just keeps running. He runs about three more yards and then lowers his shoulder right into the chest of a linebacker, hitting the guy with his now bare head square in the dude's shoulder pads.
That we could do a whole show on how hit or miss the draft analysis is. I mean, we've talked about San Francisco. Look at San Francisco. In the same draft, or the same two back-to-back years, they absolutely cornholed themselves on the Trey Lance evaluation.
And then they saved themselves a draft later.
And then they absolutely pull a Tom Brady evaluation on Brock Purdy.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing happened with Washington back in the day. Oh, we're going to pick RG3, and granted, he at least won the Rookie of the Year. He did at least give us that.
Yeah, and as a backup plan, we'll get Kirk Cousins.
Yeah, but as a backup plan, here's this fourth rounder that's going to have a much better career.
Mm-hmm.
It is so hit or miss. They don't know. Sometimes they know, but a lot of times it's just a gut feeling.
I will say, though, on that same general topic, I remember I watched NFL Network. We talked about NFL films earlier. Did the top 10 undrafted players of all time. It was the most irritating viewing experience of my life because of all the no-names that come in that are all reporters or comedians or this and that, who I normally love. They're normally pretty funny on the show, but saying things like, number 5, Antonio Gates, for the top 10 undrafted players ever. And a lady whose job is beat reporter for the Cleveland Browns said, and I quote, word for word, I understand he didn't play football when he was in college, but somebody should have known. What? 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 Adam Vinatieri was on that list, and people were like, I understand all he's going to do is kick us to 2 Super Bowls and make the game-winning kick, but I don't think he's worth one of my... What do you mean? As if that's knowledge that people would have had about a kicker.
Yeah, I just... they don't know.
I'm like, what are you talking about?
Well, look at this most recent group of quarterbacks that all got picked. First off, I was never a Zach Wilson fan, which we've pointed out many times. Guess what? Some of the smartest people in the league... In the world... thought that guy was going to tear it up.
I unfortunately fell in love with all his highlights of him doing the... Because I said, it reminds me of Aaron Rodgers, and I hate that. But I'm going to roll to my right, and then look at this. I can, off my back foot, fling the ball like my arm is made out of rubber bands to the far left sideline, 50 yards downfield on a rope. And I watched all these highlights, and I said, oh my goodness, this dude has unbelievable arm talent. What a stud. Oopsie daisies.
Yeah. So there's always that every year.
Turns out he happens to also be stupid.
Well,
I didn't realize that.
I don't know if he's stupid, but I think he's a crap leader.
He's that, but I mean, you can tell from his game film that he just straight up doesn't see guys.
Well, I think he's arrogant, too. I don't think he's willing to learn. I think he's like, oh, I'm already good. I don't care what you say. I'm good. It's like, nope, you're not. Anyway... I could do a whole show bad-mouthing Zach Wilson. So,
well, the off-season's right around the corner, Dal. We'll have plenty of shows where we're trying to fill time with bad-mouthing Zach Wilson.
But we do have to bring up a little bit of NBA because there were some huge, huge trades that happened just before the trade deadline. One of the funnier ones, and he's never going to see the court. I'd be shocked if he did. But Russell Westbrook to the Utah Jazz... They have already had probably 3 or 4 run-ins. And what I mean by that is Russell Wilson and Jazz fans of accused racism, poor treatment. You've had fans get ejected and banned for things that they've said or allegedly said to Russell Wilson and his family. Not Russell Wilson, Russell Westbrook. And I just laughed. When I saw that yesterday, I just laughed. I'm like, he will never wear a Jazz uniform. And yeah, you read the things like, yeah, he's expected to be bought out by the Jazz. They just wanted his cap space.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to buy him out, and then they'll have more cap space. But I just laughed. And then obviously the other one, Kevin Durant to the Phoenix Suns. Holy crap.
Although all the reports of it, because I'm not as big of an NBA fan, obviously.
And I'm not,
Of the four sports, it's the fourth one I watch, but I have other friends that are huge basketball fans, and the consensus opinion appears to be the Phoenix Suns now have the best starting lineup in basketball and arguably the worst bench in all of basketball,
yeah.
Which, as far as I understand, is still important in basketball.
Well, you still got to go out and be healthy enough to play the game and play all the minutes. It's just...
Yeah, you got a good chunk of time you got to eat up. I don't think Durant can play all 48 of them.
But Durant, Devin Booker, Chris Paul, who I loathe. I cannot stand Chris Paul.
Child porn 3.
All these people that are like, oh, now Chris Paul's finally going to get his ring. I'm like, I don't want him to get a ring. Only ring I want him to get is his Western Conference championship ring. That's all I want. But just huge trades. And can we talk about one of the biggest bed-crapping moves of all time, the Brooklyn Nets, who said, we're going to get Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant and James Harden, and we're going to dominate. They played together for 8 games. 8! There has never been a more colossal cluster of,
do you remember,
of going out and trying to get superstars to come to your team and getting them and then have it fall apart like a paper straw. I have never even heard of anything that bad. It is crazy bad.
Do you remember in 2011, the Eagles were coming off an 11-5 year with Mike Vick taking second for MVP, and they went out and they got Nnamdi Asamoah.
Yeah.
And they brought in like 3 defensive players.
The dream
and
team.
And Vince Young called them a dream team, and then they went 6-10.
Yeah. Well, yeah, same
for
thing.
For no reason I bring this up.
Well, and I
though did go to a game live because my sister was in the Macy's Thanksgiving parade that year. And so my dad and I said, you know what, just taking Caitlin to practice back and forth every day is a little bit. Aaron, you want to go? The Eagles are playing the Giants on Sunday Night Football. You want to go to that? I said, you know what, that sounds great. So I put on my Walter Payton Bears jersey. I am that guy. I show up to a game in which the Bears aren't playing, and I wear my Bears jersey anyway.
It's okay.
Why not? It got me a compliment from a drunk person who told me that they really liked my Urlacher. I told them, well, thank you. I'm very proud. I raised him myself. But the Vince Young-led Eagles, because Vic was hurt at this point, actually beat the Giants in that game I went to on a fourth down stand in their own in their own red zone. It was fourth down. They sacked Eli Manning, and it ended the game, and the Eagles win. That was the Vince Young Eagles that went 6-10. That Giants team won the Super Bowl later that year. That was one of the funniest memories of my...
And if the Eagles win the Super Bowl this year, just remember, Washington beat the brakes off of them during the regular season.
Didn't you win by 1 score?
It was a very dominant 1 score
win. lest we forget the somewhat controversial, and I'm sure as a Washington...
It was not controversial.
You can't call that.
He's on the ground, and he hit him.
It was... Oh, come
on. We don't make the rules. They make the rules, and then they call them as they is.
See, but aren't you and I both the people that say over-officiousness is a little lame?
Then don't hit him.
Well...
That is no different than the guy last week for the Bengals...
Who I also said they shouldn't have thrown that flag.
It's a flag. He hit him out of bounds.
You can't.
You can, because that's a penalty. That. You have to.
You need to say, you know what? At this point, all fouls that are called
need
to be egregious.
Well, that's not the way they're going.
That needs to be how
it works,
though.
Even read a thing that there was a rumor that the league is going to address the hip drop tackle.
Yeah, that will be incredibly lame.
How in the hell can you get rid of that? You can't.
No.
No chance. Anyway, no. But I do want to bring this up because we're talking about great plans that fell apart. And I'm going to close with this because as a Wyoming fan, Wyoming basketball, we go to the NCAA tournament last year. And coming back this year, Graham Ike, Mountain West Conference preseason player of the year. Most likely we're thinking we'll get one more year out of him and then he'll declare for the draft. He is that good.
Mm-hmm.
We get super senior Hunter Maldonado back, our leading scorer, because of the COVID year. we're like, holy crap, he's coming back. We bring back local Pine Bluffs 7-footer Hunter Thompson, and then we go out and get these three Pac-12 transfers, two of them from USC, one from UCLA. They've played in the tournament. They're upperclassmen transfers. They're ready to win. On paper, Wyoming was like, oh my gosh, we're going to make a run at the Sweet 16 or even more next year, which is this year.
Mm-hmm.
So right before the season starts, preseason, Graham Ek suffers an injury. It's termed a lower leg injury, and that's all we're told for about 2 months. And they say, well, hopefully he's going to be back by conference play. Conference play starts, no Graham Ek. Of course, during this time, the three guys that come in and all the work they've done for the last 6 months, which revolves around this player, garbage, because he's not there. Then the injuries start. Anyway, I'm going to shorten it up a little bit here. Let's just say those three guys 2 days ago are no longer with the program. Graham Ek did not play 1 minute this year. Is going to take a medical red shirt. The leading scorer, Noah Reynolds, shut down since the basically first game of February for the rest of the season due to concussions. They lost several other guys to the season. Kenny Foster, done for the year. Just an absolute dismantling of this. Oh, wow, look at how great this is going to be. Wow, what an amazing offseason we had. It does not matter. You have to go out and win the games, and you have to go out and have the chemistry to do so. And I was as excited as anyone, but now I'm looking and I'm like, yeah, the Cowboys are 7-16 now, just waiting. And they played their butt off last night trying to beat UNLV. But I'm just saying, great plans, and then reality happens. So yeah, you never know.
And going back a second, you talked about Washington beating Philadelphia earlier this year. May I also just say, small victories, but if the Eagles win the Super Bowl, they had better, on their America's Game episode that comes out next year, I want to see Hassan Reddick as one of the people in the, you know, of the three people they bring in to discuss the season and break it down, his thoughts on what happened on that big Justin Fields run when they played the Bears, when they had him second and like 30, and Fields had to break Hassan Reddick, who was like top five in the league in sacks.
Yeah, he had a good year.
He had a big boy. He had two shots at Fields on the same play, and then Fields took off for what was almost a 50-yard touchdown on second and 30, and instead it turned out his heel had hit the white at the 9-yard line, so they scored a play later, and it was David Montgomery, and boo. That doesn't help my
I don't know if that's going to make the America's Game
I just
season.
Hope it does.
I don't know that it's going to.
I do remember watching the Buccaneers one from 2020 and Tom Brady having to talk about losing to Nick Foles for the second time because the Bears had beaten the Bucs on the infamous, but it's fourth down, right?
Oh.
No, Tom, that was fourth down. No, this is fourth down. No, oh. Tom, the game is over. You have lost. Please go home. No, it's fourth down.
Oh, crap.
Tom.
It's nice to know what happens to everyone. So anyway, we're both picking the Eagles.
Yep.
I hope everyone enjoys. What's your go-to Super Bowl food?
Oh, from time to time, I'll go to a Super Bowl party, and it's whatever they're serving. This time, I don't know that we are. But my wife has decided we have a roast in the freezer. And we're going to attempt it for the first time because we haven't made this ourselves. But my mom used to make this all the time, especially around the Super Bowl because it was my dad's favorite. I like it too. A good Italian beef sandwiches. You put it in the crock pot. You put all the Italian spices on that sucker. You shred it. You put it on a nice hoagie roll with some cheese and some peppers.
Good. So my brother,
it's very Chicagoan thing.
We kind of rotated around. I have three brothers who are capable of hosting a Super Bowl party. I am not one of those. This particular one, his wife is an amazing cook.
Mm-hmm.
Everything she makes, and she's very like nonchalant about it. She's like, "Oh yeah, I just made these things," and you're like, "I could eat this whole plate of whatever this is." So anyway, but I've been told they're making Kansas City style barbecue, and I am just drooling talking about it. Because they actually drove through Kansas City for some family thing, taking a daughter out to school or picking her up, whatever. And so they got, like, I don't know. I feel like they got some of the KC rubbed off on them, at least barbecue-wise.
Mm-hmm.
And I am just, I may not eat at all on Saturday.
Just
go into there.
Prepping.
Just going, I am so hungry. Like one of those, you could eat something off the ground and be like, oh, that tastes pretty good. And then you get hit with something that's really good and it just puts you on your butt.
Ruins food for the rest of time.
Anyway,
you go,
nothing I'm looking forward to it.
Delicious ever again. I'm hoping that we do a good job with our Italian beef. If it's really good,
sounds great.
Maybe I'll bring some in the following Monday. Ooh. Whatever's left over. If by some miracle I leave some for the rest of you,
I was gonna say I wouldn't if I was you.
It is an entire roast though, and there's only two of us. Unless Max is gonna have a sandwich.
Yeah, his teeth are still coming in.
He's got a fourth one now.
Yeah, still.
He ate some Chick-fil-A with us the other day. It was very adorable. Mackenzie kept putting a nugget near his mouth, and he would scrape the skin off of the nugget and then just go. It was cracking us up.
Good job.
Yes. I also say this. I'll add it at the end because that's what I tend to do. Make them little short snippets here at the end. Remember on my review of the Royal Rumble, Dal, last week? And my one complaint was that they gave Rhodes the win but forgot to include any other potential winners in the actual match. Okay. So Sami Zayn was one of the other ones that got a huge ovation at the Rumble for turning on Roman, which we all were hoping would happen and saw coming. Great story. They got going. Turns out we are still going to get a Roman-Sami match. And you have no idea how excited I am for this for one reason. Sami Zayn is from Montreal, Quebec, Canada. And Canada loves their professional wrestling, especially Toronto, Calgary, and Quebec. They always huge ovations, huge pops, as they're called in the wrestling world, when you just get that one huge burst of noise from a crowd. Canadians love wrestling, and they love Canadian wrestlers. It's their thing. So Elimination Chamber is the upcoming pay-per-view. Roman Reigns is going to be facing Sami Zayn, the most over wrestler in the world right now, because everyone loves his scrappy underdog, you were the henchman, but then you turned on your boss thing. I'm sure we've seen that story in a billion movies, TV shows, everything. He was the underling, he was the mistreated henchman, and he finally turned on his boss. He said, no more, and everyone loves him. The Elimination Chamber, where they're going to have this match in the main event, is taking place in Montreal, Canada, Sami Zayn's hometown. That crowd is going to be so much fun to listen to. They are going to be so loud.
And so drunk.
And so drunk, but that's not anything to do with what's taking place in the arena. That's just the default state of Quebec. And I am very much looking forward to watching that entire
I like ordeal. How excited you get for this. It really makes me happy.
Just for the fun of it, because I knew it would be similar, I rewatched Rock versus Hulk Hogan on our trip to Idaho Falls yesterday. My shoulder was all bugging me, so Mackenzie offered to drive the second stretch of it. So I said, well, we're here. Well, I'm like, you know what? I'm going to open up Peacock. Mackenzie, you listen to music. I'm going to turn on Rock versus Hogan from WrestleMania 18. You want to talk about a wrestling match in which nothing actually happened? They don't really do stuff. Like, they don't do elaborate moves. Neither of them can do a flip. They're not going to jump off the top rope. They're not Kurt Angle and have all this Olympic wrestler cardio to just do move after move after. Literally, the whole match is some pushing. They do their poses. A clothesline. And then they hit all their signature moves. It's nothing. They just do basic run-of-the-mill 1980s stuff. And it's one of the greatest matches ever because Toronto will not shut up about it the whole time. Hulk Hogan hits he does the flex and then he hits this pose. And you would have thought that every member of the crowd had just been handed $1 million right then and there. They just explode with noise. And I know it's the silliest thing ever. Everyone knows that the hulking up, are you familiar with that?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
When Hulk Hogan's, he's taken too much damage, but he's turned into an anime character. He's Goku now.
He's shaking his head. Here he comes.
Here's reserve power. He's got it in him. The Rock hits him with two finishers in a row, goes for the pin. Hulk Hogan kicks out at two, doesn't even pause. As soon as he kicks out, he gets onto his knees and he's hulking up. And the crowd, I have never heard a wrestling crowd be louder than that Toronto crowd in full nostalgia mode got. For at this point, he had to be 48. I mean, this was already an old Hulk Hogan.
He's 69 now, and the reason I know that is because when I was looking up Vince McMahon, he was on the same page.
Okay, so yeah, he probably was, because this was 2002.
Okay.
So he probably was 48. Wow.
49.
Well.
Yeah, 48, 49, yeah.
21 years ago.
He's pushing 50.
Yes. And they're like, this is Hulk Hogan, though. I remember Hulk Hogan from when I was a kid. He's doing the thing he did when I was a kid. And they just explode. For a man jiggling his fists and shaking his head a little bit. And The Rock, with some brilliant showcasing his future Hollywood chops, looks like he's watching a zombie revive right in front of him. He's just got the most hilarious, over-the-top, shocked face.
Oh, crap.
The Rock ended up winning, but the crowd was cheering for both of them, doing all of their fun stuff for the entire thing. It's the most fun ever. I am hoping that Canada come. Now, they won't be cheering for both men this time, but I'm hoping that the Canadians bring out their full "We love Canada and we hate not Canada" the whole deal for Sami Zayn at this coming pay-per-view. I think that if they just take over and just are loud, it will be enjoyable, and I'm looking forward to it. Also, I never got this out earlier, but the second piece of Bears offseason news is the Bears are planning to extend tight end Cole Kmet. Yay.
Thumbs up from Aaron.
I like Cole Kmet. He was from Notre Dame. He was really good at Notre Dame. He is above average in the NFL. And what more can you ask out of a Notre Dame player? That seems to be kind of where they peak in the last few, except for tight ends, weirdly. So it's shocking that he's not like an all-pro at this point, because Rudolph, of course, goes to the Vikings and is a superstar. Stupid, what was the Dolphin tight end that played for Notre Dame for a while? It was really good.
I don't know.
it was in the, like, 2000s and
I'm not a Notre Dame fan.
No, but maybe you just remember the Dolphins tight end from the late 2000s, early 2010s. Sorry. It was really good. I remember that.
I don't.
Dave Casper.
Okay.
Notre Dame. The New York Giant, Bavaro.
You're reaching now.
Notre Dame.
Screw Mark Bavaro.
All right. Not Mark Bavaro.
Come on, man. Come on, wrap it up. People got work to do.
Well, you can catch us every week, except for when you can't, on Spotify, on YouTube, and on svinews.com/podcasts. We'll see you guys to hopefully celebrate the Eagles Super Bowl win next time. We'll